Siegfried, Part 1. Long, long indeed seemed the days to Wotan. Again and again did his thoughts carry him back to the day when Valhalla first stood before him in all its splendid beauty. Many were the times when in his memory the great frost giant, Fafnir, stood before him demanding all the gold, even the ring. Is it any wonder that the days seemed long to him? But everything was different with Fafnir, for he now had what he always desired, a great pile of gold and magic power. He very seldom thought of Valhalla. His thoughts were of nothing but the gold. First he carried his treasure, the gold, the magic helmet, and the fated ring, far away to his own country. But hardly had he reached his home when he realized that the gold would not be safe, for at any moment someone might come and steal it away. Again he gathered up his treasure and started to look all over the world to find the best and safest place for it. The journey would have seemed very long to us, but to him it was the work of only 3 or 4 days, for with a single step he could cover miles of distance. River after river he crossed, stepping over many a high mountain, speeding across far-reaching plains and deserts, till at last he came to a great dark forest. The forest was dark because the trees grew so close to one another that their branches overlapped and kept out the sunlight. In some places, however, the trees were not so close, and there the sun shone warm and bright all the day. This forest was the home of many fierce, wild animals, especially of bears. "Ha, ha!" exclaimed Fafnir as he looked about him. "Here I can live with my gold. No one will be apt to come into this wild place." So he pushed his way into the dark forest until he came to a deep black cave. All the time he held close to him the bags which contained his treasure. "Just the place," said he as he peered into the cave. "Here I will stay day and night with my gold. In this doorway I will sit forever to guard my hoard." As he sat there, he heard the lions roaring, the bears growling, and the leaves rustling as they talked to the wind. Fafnir's face looked more like shadow than sunlight as he crouched near his gold. "Some wanderer might possibly pass by my cave," thought he, "and in some way discover my gold and steal it. What can I do to make it more safe?" Suddenly his face changed. Jumping up, he grasped the magic helmet. "I know what I'll do. I will put this helmet on my head and change into a dragon, so great and fierce and ugly that no one will dare come near me." And all for the sake of the gold, he put on the magic helmet, and the change came. He was no longer the great frost giant, but a fierce and terrible dragon. He did not stand erect and mighty like the great giant that he had been, but lay squirming and twisting, a huge, awful serpent. He was more terrible than you can imagine. His body was somewhat like that of a whale, while his skin was covered with slimy green scales. His tail was long and pointed, and in the end was a sting of deadly poison. His teeth were sharp like a saw, and he breathed out fiery smoke so hot and poisonous that should it touch anyone, it would kill him instantly. This is what the frost giant, the mighty Fafnir, changed himself into for a pile of gold. Meantime, Alberic and all the other Nibelungs were having a very uncomfortable, unhappy time, for each one was trying to think how he could manage to get possession of the gold again. Alberic's face seemed to grow blacker and blacker each day, and he was so cross and ugly that no one dared to go near him. Mime, Alberic's brother, was also plotting and planning how he could steal away the gold. The Nibelungs, in one way, were not so afraid of Mime as they were of Alberic, for he did not frighten them with such terrible threats. But he was very sly and untruthful, so they could never believe anything he said. One day there was great excitement in this underground kingdom, for Mime was missing. They searched in every place, but nowhere was he to be found. Then Alberic was still uglier, for he felt sure Mime was in some way going to find the gold, and he wanted to get it for himself. The night before, when all were asleep, Mime had silently stolen away from his underground home. He had taken with him a number of his tools that he might still forge chains and swords and many other things which a blacksmith makes. These ugly little Nibelungs had a queer, sly way of finding out all sorts of things which were not meant for them to know. No one ever knew how they learned these things, strange, sly little dwarfs that they were. It was not to be wondered at that they heard strange earth voices speaking to them when no one else could hear. It must have been in some such way as this that Mime found out about the faded gold, because although he did not know just where it was, he did know that in a dark forest somewhere, Fafnir, in the shape of a huge dragon, was guarding it. And so, in hopes of stealing the gold, Mime came from his dark, dreary home to live above the earth. He wandered many days before he could find any trace of the dragon. It was in the springtime, and the earth was just budding into new beauty. The flowers were in bloom and giving out their sweetest perfume. The trees had just put out new leaves, while hidden in their branches were many little nests in which sat mother birds upon the eggs, soon to tell their secret. The whole earth rang with the glad, joyous song of springtime. But Mime did not notice any of these beauties, for there was no springtime in his heart. All his thoughts were of gold and the magic. At last he succeeded in finding the cave in which lived the fearful dragon guarding the faded gold. Mime often crouched for hours in some dark part of the forest, trying to plan some way to gain possession of the gold and the ring, but he knew, deep down in his heart, that he himself could never kill the dragon, for he was a coward, and one must be without fear to dare face such a monster. At last, Mime's plans were completed. He had decided to find a cave in another part of the forest, and there spend his days forging a sword strong enough to slay the dragon. "But I will not dare go near enough to kill him, even though I may forge a sword stout enough to pierce his heart," thought he. "Ah, now I have it. There in my cave I will work day and night until a sword shall be made which no human power can break. Then I will wait until a hero, strong and brave, shall come through the forest. I will deceive him so that he will kill for me the dragon, and then I will destroy the hero, and the gold shall be mine." As Mime said this, his face looked blacker and more repulsive than before. Very little time was lost before he was settled in a cave in another part of the forest. Here he heaped a pile of stones, and on them placed his anvil, while nearby he made a forge of large, rough rocks which were near at hand. Many days and nights the queer little Nibelung spent trying to forge the sword of which he had dreamed, but it was in vain, for when he struck the sword upon a stone, it would break into pieces. Often tired and almost discouraged with his wicked work, Mime would walk sometimes far into the forest, but this he never enjoyed, for the growling of the bears and the roaring of the lions struck terror to his cowardly heart. However, one morning he ventured a little farther than usual into the woods, hoping he might in some way learn how to make the sword. Suddenly he stopped, for he heard a cry like that of a little baby. He listened, and again the same cry was heard. His first thought was to run back to his cave. Then he decided to find whence came the cry. He did not have to go far, for almost at his feet lay a little baby boy, hardly more than a day old. There was something in the child's face which made Mime know that when he was grown to manhood, he would be one of Earth's bravest heroes. Stooping to look more closely at the baby, Mime's eyes caught sight of a broken sword, and he knew at once that this sword, when mended, would be the weapon of his dreams, for it was large and sharp and made of the strongest steel in the world. He thought for a moment, then said, I will take the baby, bring him up to be a strong man, and then have him with this sword slay the dragon. Afterwards, I can in some way rid myself of him, and the gold and the ring shall be mine. So he lifted the beautiful baby boy in his arms, picked up the broken sword, and was about to start for his cave when he heard a mysterious voice say, Siegfried is the name of the child, and Nothung the name of the magic sword, and only he who knows no fear can weld it together. Mim looked all about him to see whence came the voice, but no one could be seen. Again it was heard, fainter and farther away this time. Siegfried is the name of the child, and Nothung the name of the magic sword, and only he who knows no fear can weld it together. Aha! Laughed Mim. Whoever it is that spoke does not know of my cunning work. I can easily mend the sword. Magic, magic, he chuckled as he turned away with the baby and the sword in his arms. Magic, so much the better. All the more confident now am I that when mended it will pierce the heart of the dragon. The first thing Mim did on reaching the cave was to hide the sword where he was quite sure it would never be discovered. Next he brought skins and placed them on a huge hollow log. This was the baby's bed. I will be as good as I can to the child and give him the right kind of food so that he may grow up to be of use to me, thought the dwarf. How different this baby's life was from the lives of our babies. He had no loving mother to sing him to sleep at night and to comfort him when he felt unhappy over some little sorrow, and above all, to tell him strange, wonderful stories of brave heroes who had given their lives to protect weaker ones. He never saw anyone but Mim, never knew that anyone else lived but the strange little Nibelung. Mim, however, was as kind to the baby, in his rough way, as he knew how to be. Every morning when the sun was shining, he would carry him out of the cave and place him under the trees, that he might lie and kick out his little limbs and, breathing in the fresh forest air, listen to the merry songs of the birds as they flew through the blue sky far above the tops of the trees. Mim now very seldom left his cave, and day after day could be heard his strange, unhappy song. He had but one thought now, and that was of the baby growing to a strong man that he might kill the dragon. So he watched with great interest the growth of the child. Each day little Siegfried grew stronger and stronger so that before long he could walk. Then came very happy days for him. He would wander into the forest quite away from the cave and sit and listen to the wind as it whispered to the trees. Often a little baby bear would come up to him and play with him for hours at a time. Sometimes the mother bear would come and lie on the grass nearby, watching the young child playing with her baby, but she never thought of doing him any harm. Day by day Siegfried grew more beautiful. His little arms and legs grew stronger, his body more erect, and his golden hair fell like sunbeams about his baby face, which each day had more strength in it. He was clothed in real forest dress, consisting of a little fur shirt and skin sandals on his feet. Mim had made for him a silver horn which he wore swung over his shoulders. With this horn he could call the birds and play to the bears, which were his constant companions. Often would that part of the forest ring with the glad, happy notes of his silver horn. Not only did the birds and bears respond to the call, but the mother foxes would come with their little ones, and the wolves with their cubs. They would nestle close to the young boy while he played on his horn for them. They felt his courage and loved him for it. Happy indeed were these days to the young Siegfried. Is it to be wondered at that he grew up to be all that even the grasping Mim could desire? Never was such a hero seen before. One bright sunny morning, triumphant in the strength of his young manhood, Siegfried stood before Mime, demanding a sword so strong that he could not break it. Mime was such a cowardly dwarf that the brave youth could not do otherwise than despise him, and he very seldom stayed in the cave. This was the reason he demanded a strong sword, for he was planning to leave Mime and the forest and see something of the world, but he would not go without some means of defense. "The sword must be made by the time I return," said the youth as he disappeared in the forest. "Now is my time. At last the gold shall be mine," cried Mime. Cautiously he crept to the place where the broken sword had been laid away for so many years. Again he heard the words, "It is a magic sword, and only he who knows no fear can weld it together." "That voice does not know of my cunning as a smith," laughed Mime as he hastened to the bellows. He blew the fire to a white heat and plunged the sword in and made ready his hammer and anvil. Then, drawing the sword from the fire, he pounded it as he had never pounded before, trying to weld it together. But to his horror, he could make no impression upon it. Again the voice, "Only he who knows no fear can weld it together." "Alas, alas," cried Mime, "I can never do it. Whom now can I get to mend me the sword?" Again and again did he try, but it was of no use. Meanwhile, Siegfried had gone far into the forest and thrown himself upon the ground. Putting his horn to his lips, he called to his friends, the forest beasts and birds. Soon he was answered by singing birds, huge bears, cunning foxes, and wolves. Each mother that day had brought her babies with her. Siegfried said very little to them, for he was thinking strange, sweet thoughts. "How kind all the forest beasts are to their little ones, and the babies look just like their mother and father. Who is my mother?" cried Siegfried. With this he sprang up and ran to a stream close by and looked in. There he saw his own image reflected. Large, strong, and erect was his body. Pure, true, and brave was his face. Long he stood gazing at his reflection in the water and thinking, "Why should not I look like my mother and father? All the forest creatures do. I am no longer a boy. I am a man, and this very day I will make Mime tell me who I am and who my parents are. He cannot be my father, for I do not look at all like him. Mime is cowardly and sly, but the sight of a bear will frighten him so much that he will not dare tell me anything but the truth." Again he blew his horn, and a great black bear came running up to him. Siegfried fastened a rope about the bear's neck, and together they started for the cave in which dwelt the cowardly Mime, who would so soon have to tell Siegfried who he was and why he was living in the forest with the little ugly sly dwarf when he himself was so brave and true.